The Free Library of Philadelphia is proud to present a podcast from our author event series, recorded live at the Central Library on the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. To learn more about the Free Library, the Central Library Expansion Project, and how your contribution can help our programs and services for the community, please visit freelibrary.org.
Welcome to the Free Library of Philadelphia. My name is Helen Miller, and I am delighted to be here tonight to kick off the fall authors event season with our fantastic author, Terry McMillan. As we gather here, with a shared love of reading, particularly a shared love of her books, it's especially fitting today because it is also International Literacy Day. So I suggest celebrating by picking up a copy of Getting to Happy and cracking it open at your leisure, or maybe as soon as you get home tonight. The book was just released yesterday. Yeah. But before we begin, I'd like to ask you to please silence your cell phones. And the second announcement is to remind you that after tonight's program, not that you would know, but there is an author signing upstairs in the lobby. So that will be immediately following the event here in the auditorium. And then the last thing that I was asked to mention is that Zane will be here on September 28th at 7:30 to talk about her new novel, Hot Box. And for more information, you can go on the library website and click on Author Events. So that's www.freelibrary.org and click on Author Events. Okay. According to the Washington Post Book World, Terry McMillan has gotten extensive critical and popular acclaim for her character-driven novels told with an authentic, unpretentious voice. As we all know, her New York Times best-selling works and books, Waiting to Exhale and How Stella Got Her Groove Back, have been adapted to major motion pictures. With her new novel, Getting to Happy, she revisits Waiting to Exhale. Those ladies, 15 years ago, reveal each of them at her own midlife crosswords. I'm sure we have been waiting to hear and understand what happened to Savannah and Robin and Bernie and Gloria, and our wait is finally over. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Terry McMillan.
Thank you. Wow. Hey, that was cool. So. Just a minute. They're making me cry. Shit. Okay. Oh, Lord. This makeup is free, okay? Oh. Philadelphia, you guys are always so good. I mean, really. Oh, Lord have mercy. Can you hear me?
Yes.
This is when I used to smoke. Now I remember why. Thank you all so much, and thank you for coming. And just for your support and your enthusiasm, I really do appreciate it. But I didn't expect all this. Lord have mercy. They weren't this nice in New York. Okay. I'm going to read something from this book. I'm going to read the first chapter. And for those of you who have this book with you or have it, don't sit here and follow along with me, okay? Pretty please. I'm not going to say anything. I'm just going to read, okay? And I will be happy to answer your questions. What's this for? Because this is where you can hear me from, right? Okay. Whew, you guys got me all. Lord have mercy. The first chapter, you see I have my initials so I can remember whose book it is. TM copy. But they all look alike, you know. I'm going to read the Savannah. And you know, this takes place in 2005, just so that you know, okay? And this is Savannah's chapter, the first chapter, and it's called The Deep End. And I usually like to look out, but sometimes it's hard when you get old. Okay. Thank God for those tacos. Anyway, who in here follows me on Twitter? Oh, I'm glad it's not a whole bunch. No tea partiers in the room, I see, huh? Are you sure you don't want to come to Vegas with me? My husband asked for the second time this morning. Oh, and I have braces, so sometimes I trip over a word. Don't hold it against me. Are you sure you don't want to come to Vegas with me? My husband asked for the second time this morning. I don't want to go for two reasons. First of all, it's not like he's inviting me for a hot and heavy weekend where I'll get to wear something snazzy and we'll see a show and casino hop and stay up late and make love and sleep in and order room service. Not even close. It's another exciting trade show. Isaac builds fences, decks, gazebos, and pergolas. And as of a few months ago, playhouses. He's in love with wood. Can I help it if I don't get worked up hearing about galvanized nails or color-clad chain links and breakthroughs and screws and joints? I don't bother answering him because he's known for weeks I'm under a deadline for a story I'm doing on teenage pregnancy in Arizona, Phoenix in particular, which is the other reason I can't go. I've been sitting in front of my laptop in my pajamas for the past 40 minutes waiting for him to leave, so I'll finally have 3.5 days to myself to focus. But he is taking his sweet time. I didn't hear you. He's looking for something. I dare not ask what. You'd have the room all to yourself for most of the day. You could still work, Savannah. I know that's not true, Isaac. You know that's not true, Isaac. I take a sip of my lukewarm coffee. I've been to so many of these conventions trying to be the supportive wife, but I always get stuck with the wives, most of whom just want to sit around the pool all day reading romance novels or People magazine while they sip on margaritas and eat nachos, or linger in the malls for hours with their husband's credit cards, trying on resort wear for the cruise they're all going on in the near future. I'm not crazy about cruises. I went on one with Mama and my sister, Sheila, and those long, narrow hallways gave me the creeps because I've seen too many horror movies where the killer jumps out of the doorway and pulls you inside. After 2 or 3 days of being out in the middle of the ocean with no land in sight until you wake up not knowing what country you might be in front of, by day 4, I was ready to jump off our balcony and backstroke home. And then there are those obligatory convention dinners. I'd sit there in one of the hotel ballrooms at a table full of contractors and their now gussied up wives, trying to be sociable, but I was basically making small talk since they never discussed anything that might be going on in the world. Call me elitist, but this often made me feel like an alien who'd been dragged to another planet by my husband because he, as well as they, didn't seem to think producing television shows about cultural and social issues was as interesting as all the things they could build out of lumber. It truly irks Isaac that people don't respect or appreciate the role wood plays in our lives. That we aren't aware of how much we take it for granted, as if it'll always be here, and how much we rely on it yet overlook its value to the point we ignore it and its beauty. It would be nice if he still saw me the same way. For about 8 of the past 10 years, it felt like he did. As Isaac passes behind me, he smells like green apples and fresh-squeezed lemons. For a split second, it reminds me of when we used to linger in the bathtub surrounded by sage and lemongrass candles, my back snug against his chest, his arms wrapped around me, and our toes making love. Those were the good old days. I snap out of it. Now he's pushing my favorite mustard-colored duffel across these terracotta tiles with those size 14 boots, leaving black scuff marks behind him as he simultaneously pulls a white sweatshirt over a white undershirt. It's a V-neck and shows the top of a black forest on his chest. I wish I knew him. If I could, you know I would, I say while checking my email. Of course, there are back-to-back messages from Robin, a joke I don't bother to read, and an attachment about a new motionless exercise she told me and Gloria about last week that almost had us choking from laughter. She believes almost everything she sees on TV. You just don't want to go, he says, and starts looking through his pockets to make sure he has everything. He doesn't. I know just about all his patterns. Why don't you just come out and say it? Because it wouldn't be true, Isaac. I rarely lie. Although I'm not always 100% honest. And this is one of those times. Then I guess I'll see you on Tuesday after rush hour. He walks over, presses his palms against my shoulder blades, gives him a little squeeze, bends over and gives me a peck on the cheek. I don't feel a thing except the scratchy new growth on his face. You have everything, I ask? What if I don't? Would it matter to you? Of course it would matter to me, Isaac. Right before he gets to the door leading to the garage, he turns and looks at me as if he doesn't believe me. Isaac knows we're on shaky ground. I'm seriously beginning to think you might be racist, he says. He's trying to find a button to push, but I'm not falling for it. Part of our problem is he's forgotten how to talk to me. He's forgotten how to ask me a question that doesn't put me on the defensive. All those sessions with the marriage counselor, for some of which he played sick or was too busy drilling or hammering, aren't saving us. I'm tired of this war, which is why I'm ready to hold up a white flag. Aren't you supposed to be picking up somebody? So now you're trying to get rid of me, is that it? Yes, how's that for an honest answer? I feel my body stiffen using the truth to lie. Have a good time, Isaac. Wait a second. Did you remember to make the loan payment? I only ask because he seems to have had a little bout of amnesia off and on the past 6 or 7 months. It's the cause of brand new friction. I have no idea what he's been doing with his money. It's not gambling that much, I do know. He stays away from the India casinos and usually dreads these conventions when they're in Vegas. He thinks gambling is too much of a gamble because most people lose. That's not really it. Isaac is just too cheap. Yes, I made it. As a matter of fact, I paid too. Thank you. And have a good time, I say, without moving my fingers, which are frozen 2 or 3 inches above the keys. I co-signed for this loan to help him start his business. And after it took off, he took over the payments. Unfortunately, I've discovered by default that Isaac isn't as proficient managing his finances as he is at building. To this day, he refuses to hire a bookkeeper, which is one of the reasons why his taxes are always late. Good luck on your research, he says, and heads for the garage. He is so disingenuous. He hardly ever watches my shows anymore. For years, he pretended he was interested, but over time, he couldn't even fake it anymore. He thinks my stories show problems that can't be solved, so what's the point? I finally hear the door shut. I turn around and stare at it. It's red, my bright idea. I'm hoping to hear the garage door go up. There it is. Then the engine roars in his truck. Instead of turning my attention back to the screen, I wait for the handle to turn. Sure enough, in he comes. I forgot my cell phone. He dashes down the hallway to our bedroom. To this day, Isaac reminds me of a black Paul Bunyan, except he's finally getting a few strands of gray. His mustache and goatee look like they've been sprayed with silver dust. He's still sexy as hell, which is a shame, because it doesn't seem to be serving any purpose. I shouldn't dog him too much. Isaac is a good man. I just think marrying each other wasn't the best thing we could have done for each other. He stops dead in his tracks, pivots, comes over and kisses me in the exact same spot. This time he lets his lips stay a millisecond longer. I appreciate the gesture. I'll call when I get checked in, he says. I make myself some French toast, put a few strips of bacon in the microwave, and sit back in front of my laptop. My mind isn't on teen pregnancy, so I bookmark the sites I may want to look at later. I'm thinking about the man who just left, the one I loved harder than all the others. I was a 40-year-old love-starved black woman who'd never been married and didn't think it was still possible. I met Isaac in church. He was tall, dark, and handsome. But aren't they always? I was sitting near the front and found myself going deaf as the minister delivered yet another guilt-laced sermon about the evils of temptation because I was slowly being hypnotized by Isaac Hathaway's soft black eyes up there in the third row of the choir. This was a small church. It was as if he appeared out of nowhere. I certainly would have noticed him before. Not that I went to church every Sunday. And not that I didn't have faith in God. I did and still do. I've been on a whole lot of folks' prayer lists, and God had known for years my address was still 111 Unlucky in Love Avenue. On this particular Sunday, this man followed me down those church steps to the parking lot and seduced me with my clothes on. After he smiled at me, introduced himself, and in a slow baritone said, "You are absolutely beautiful." I blushed brick red because he was lying through his teeth. I was not then, nor am I now, even remotely close to beautiful. Now, I've been known to be attractive on special occasions, and I do my best. I do my best to project as much beauty as I can muster from deep inside, though I often fail. On this particular day, I was wearing a boring brown dress I thought was perfect for church, since it's not a venue for which I dress to draw attention to myself. Back then, I hadn't gotten into the habit of exercising on a regular basis, and my dress didn't conceal enough of my curves for my taste, so Isaac couldn't possibly have been moved by my breasts, since they were and still are close to non-existent. The pearls were noticeably fake, which should have given a clue I wasn't loaded, although I made out okay. Besides, who under 50 wears real pearls to church? I never did hear him sing solo. I would later think God had saved the best for last. Any woman in my position would have felt the same way and probably done the same thing, parachuted into his arms. Or was it his bed first? Who can remember? Who cares? He was intoxicating, and any fool would have wanted more of him. Hey, stop with those pictures with the flashes. You're going to make me blind. Anyway, all I know, you can take as many as you want afterwards. All I know is he made me feel brand new, lit a fire in me that burned bright orange. His smile reduced me to mashed potatoes. I loved that he held my hand wherever we went and stroked my palm with his thumb. We prayed together. A few months later, he moved into my house. I knew I'd gotten lucky because I found a man who wasn't afraid to admit his faith in God and also came with his own tool belt. That's not my line. Anyway, nothing stayed broken for long. Isaac had magical hands. He would shampoo and condition my hair, brush it at night, and oil my scalp. Oh, God, stop. He massaged my feet while I read, he massaged my feet while I read and he watched television. He put lavender and Lang Lang oil in my bathwater and let me lean way back. I could have lived forever in his arms. He made me feel safe, necessary, to the point I started believing I was beautiful. For years, he kissed me twice a day, every single day, and not a peck like that bullshit he just gave me today, but a warm, slow, succulent kiss complete with arms I dreamed about when I was alone in a hotel room on a business trip. Isaac is the best kisser in the world and to date the best lover I've ever had in my life. He was my Mr. Wonderful. I thought he was going to be my Mr. Once and for All. There was no escaping the hold he had on me or the spell he put on me. So after a year of complete bliss, I surrendered and said, "Of course I'll be your wife." When he lost his job putting up the fence along the Arizona-Mexico border because the company had gotten busted for hiring illegals, I wasn't worried. He was only 26 units shy of getting his degree in engineering. But unfortunately, my world started shrinking not long after I married Mr. Wonderful. Since I didn't have kids, I was used to doing what I wanted and going where I wanted. I ate out at least two or three times a week, enjoyed going to plays and live concerts and dance performances, loved foreign films, didn't mind the subtitles. In fact, I used to go to the movies at least once a week, except in August when the slashers came out. I loved reading in bed. Unfortunately, Isaac couldn't fall asleep without the television blaring. Turns out he wasn't keen on eating in restaurants except Denny's and the Olive Garden. I never saw him open a book, but he couldn't get enough of outdoor projects or dream decks and patios or Wood magazine. He didn't like taking bona fide vacations because it was a waste of good money. He was also afraid of flying, which meant everywhere we went had to be by car. We rented movies except during holidays, and Isaac also liked fish. So once a month, we went to the aquarium. Yahoo. Last August, I flew to Chicago for the Democratic National Convention and was able to hear the young Senator Barack Obama give a speech that sounded like it might go down in history. Flying wasn't the only reason Isaac didn't want to go. Right before the 2004 primaries, I inadvertently opened his absentee ballot. He had the nerve to be registered as a fucking Republican. I couldn't believe my eyes. I don't know any black Republicans. Well, I was not only offended, but confused. I felt like I was married to a Nazi or something. Of course, you have the right to align yourself with whatever party you so choose, I said when I confronted him. But what on earth would possess you to support the Republican Party, Isaac? This was Mr. Millionaire's answer. Because they make sure we get the best tax break. I left his ass standing in the bathroom dripping wet since he was waiting for me to bring him a towel. So it was his dumbass vote that helped reelect that dumbass George Bush twice. I wondered who in the world I was really married to, and it really worried me. I can't lie. I spent a lot of energy trying to give Isaac as much love as I possibly could, as often as I could, for as long as I could. And right after he lost his job, I tried to make him feel valued. I asked him to share his dreams with me. I listened. He changed his mind about getting his degree in engineering, opting instead for a construction management program. I paid his tuition. When he talked about all the things he wanted to build one day, I shared his enthusiasm. I also slowed down, said no to some travel. The Olympics in Australia was the biggest. I cooked almost every day, washed and folded his work clothes, took pills for car sickness. Everywhere we drove, you see that sagging fence over there? That's a sign of a rookie. Watching the History Channel and this old house was foreplay. And wrestling, like witnessing phony cavemen perform acrobatics. I went to football games, which I didn't like because it was violent and took too long to make a fucking touchdown. I went camping and fishing, but I didn't like getting dirty and putting stinky things on the end of a pole and grabbing a wiggling fish that was headed for a hot skillet gave me the heebie-jeebies. Did I complain? No, I did not. I tried to do what made my husband happy. Over the years, Isaac stopped showing interest in what I felt or what I did. I had to bribe him to go to or do anything that didn't have an outcome. Whenever I wanted to talk about my stories, he always seemed to have the remote in his hand. I'm tired of not feeling respected. Since he's become a successful entrepreneur, Isaac's arrogance has pierced right through his beauty, which is why I don't like him anymore. Make no mistake, I still love him, but I haven't been in love with him for quite some time. It's not an easy thing to admit, and I'm not one of these women who feel like I need a man to complete me. I also don't think there's just one person in the world meant for you. Sometimes you luck up and sometimes your luck runs out. I'm beginning to wonder if a good marriage is even possible. What I do know is I'm tired of feeling navy blue and I have a right to feel lemon yellow. Mm-hmm. That is my life. Yeah. Ever since I turned 50, I've become more aware of the passage of time and what I'm doing with it. If I drop dead today, what legacy would I have? Would I leave? Would I have done a lot of the things I wanted to do, seen some of the places I wanted to see, and would I, if I took a few minutes just to think about it, feel as if the time I was blessed with, was well spent, or had I just bullshitted my way through it? Even though I have an interesting job, it still feels like I should be doing more. All I ever wanted was to do something with my life that would have a positive impact on other people, to do something to make us look in the mirror or slow down long enough to see what our behavior really says about us, mostly our inhumanity, since it leaves red marks. I believe the only way to evaluate how we're living is how we're not living. This is why I'm on a mission, though, to start doing things that make me feel good. I've made a vow to start eating healthier and exercising on a regular basis because I know better. I'm 25 pounds away from being fat. I don't want to have to start buying all my clothes in Encore at Nordstrom's. My goal is to be fit at 52 and 62 and 72. I want to feel better than I look. I'm not trying to be a middle-aged centerfold. I just want to look at myself naked and not be disgusted. It may sound naive, but I always thought as you got older, the quality of your life would improve, that things would be smoother, calmer, and you could finally exhale. If only. I'd probably be in the nut house if it weren't for my girlfriends, Bernadine, Robin, and Gloria. 15 years ago, we thought we were hot shit. I was 36 and had just moved from here from Denver, where I'd been a publicist for the gas company, Thrill Thrill. Bernadine and her then husband, John, talked me into moving here after a visit when a position opened up in PR at the local TV station. The three of us went to Boston University together, and I was her bridesmaid. She worked in finance for a real estate developer and had become a CPA. She introduced me to Gloria, a single parent who had her own hair salon, and Robin, Miss Congeniality. She worked in an executive capacity at an insurance company, but was still on the verge of becoming a slut. She was and still is a hoot. After years of being casualties of love, Gloria is the only one who's happily married. Times have certainly changed. We're all busy. We don't hang out like we used to, don't run our mouths on the phone half the night the way we used to, don't even gossip about each other the way we used to. We send email or text. Who can be bothered reaching out all day like teenagers and forget about happy hour? We don't even know, do they still have them? We haven't been drunk since 1999. Haven't set foot in a nightclub since Rick James had his last hit. We dance at home. Apparently, we're too damn old to have fun in public places. I don't know why we stopped being social creatures, but it's why Gloria came up with this idea of having blockbuster night. Once a month, we kick up our heels at each other's houses. It's something to do. Bernadine cooks, and she's our Black Julia Child. We make our husbands and children disappear, and we don't care where they go as long as they don't come back for 4 hours. I finally get out of my pajamas and take a cool shower. I put on a pair of purple running pants and a pink sweatshirt and grab a bottle of cold water from the fridge. I go back to my laptop and start looking at some of the sites I'd bookmarked. I hit enter. The screen turns cobalt blue, then goes completely black. I lean back in the chair thinking the battery must be dead, but I always plug the laptop in when I'm at home. And when I look under the counter, it is. I power off and wait for it to reboot. I don't hear that low blender sound. I don't hear anything. I hit the power button again, this time praying I'm not a victim of one of those apocalyptic viruses. I've got tons of irreplaceable information inside the soul of this computer. Nothing I do resuscitates it. I'm glad I have a backup disk at work. I walk down the hall to Isaac's office. The tiles are cold under my bare feet. It amazes me how neat he keeps it in here. There's a picture on one wall of giant redwood trees in Muir Woods in Northern California. On another, a bulletin board with photos of his recent projects. I sit at his desk, a beautiful maple-colored door-turned tabletop. I click on the browser and type in the last site I visited and hit enter. My site isn't what comes up. My heart is pounding as I see before my eyes a screen full of color photographs and video clips of women giving men blowjobs and three and four of them piled on top of one man and some pleasing each other. I know this is a porn site, but I didn't make a mistake when I typed. I close it and retype the same address. I don't believe when I see these same nasty people again. I do this a few more times and get the same results. I call my godson, who also happens to be my pretend nephew, John Jr., who also happens to be Bernadine's son, who goes to MIT. He's a computer geek. I explained to him what just happened to my laptop, and now this. Sounds like Uncle's browser's been hijacked. Porn sites are notorious for doing this. Well, how do you know that? It's kind of the norm. But what could have caused it? Well, it could be a virus, although I doubt it. I think Uncle's been very busy checking out these sites. And how would you know that? Over the next 15 or 20 minutes, he talks me through a process that gives me access to temporary files, which make it quite clear my husband has been having cyber sex with hundreds, if not thousands, of women, and the son of a bitch has two names. He's Isaac Hathaway to me, but Ebony King to all these nasty... Wait a minute. But Ebony King to all these nasty bitches he's been jerking off with and having virtual sex with via the little webcam attachment I gave him last Christmas. I watched porn with Isaac before I met him, but what I'm looking at takes it to a whole new level. My teeth feel cold. My fists ball up on their own, and I yank open a file drawer and just start rummaging through his credit card statements, only to discover that he's a fucking gold card member, not just on one site, but on quite a few sites, to the tune of a few grand a month. That's nothing. I sit here for the longest, more pissed off than hurt, more disgusted than anything, trying to figure out how long he's been doing this shit. It's cheating any way you look at it, except this feels much worse. It's sneaky as hell. I wonder how Isaac would feel if he saw me masturbating in front of a webcam for men. Or hell, how about other women? So this is what he's been doing in here while I'm sitting up in bed engrossing a good book. I print out the home pages of 20 or 30 of these sites and scotch tape them on the walls of his freakazoid den. Without thinking about what I'm doing, I crawl under the desk, yank the plug out of the socket, carry the computer like a corpse through the great room, outside to right across the beautiful redwood deck he built, down the four steps and over to the pool where I drop it into the deep end. This does not make me feel better. I dry off where I got splashed and sit on the edge of the bed for almost an hour. When the phone rings, I answer it like someone who's just come out of surgery. Savannah, I hear Sheila say. She's my baby sister, my only sister. I do have two brothers. Hey, I say to Sheila in a cracked voice. Girl, what in the world is wrong with you? Did somebody die? No. I just found out Isaac's been visiting a bunch of porn sites for the longest, and I'm a little pissed off. I hope this isn't all you tripping about. If you saw the shit he's been doing and how much money he's been spending, I think you'd be a little more than pissed, too. Girl, all men spend money on porn sites. I'm grateful for him if you want to know the truth. Saves me a whole lot of unnecessary energy. As soon as Paul thinks I'm asleep, I hear him tiptoeing down to the basement. I could care less. She's in Pittsburgh. Okay. I'm filing for a divorce. Not over this bullshit, Savannah. Come on. No, this is the cherry. Where is Isaac? You didn't throw him out, did you? He's at a trade convention in Vegas. Don't do anything stupid, Savannah. Like what? You didn't bust up his computer, did you? No. Is it still intact? Yes, it is. This silly shit shouldn't even qualify as grounds for a divorce. The judge would probably laugh at you in court. I'm also miserable. Most married people are miserable, but that's still no reason to get a divorce. I beg to differ with you, Sheila. Just because you and Paul have been living in marriage hell for 20-some-odd years doesn't mean everybody can tolerate it. I love Paul, and he loves me. We've had our share of problems, but everybody does. Well, I can't live like this anymore. Like what? Isaac isn't just a freak. He's also boring as hell. Paul is, too, but being boring is also not grounds for a divorce. And hanging out, no pun intended, on porn sites doesn't make him a freak. I'm bored, Sheila. Have you ever wondered if maybe you might be the one who's boring, Savannah? I mean, look at all the great stuff he builds. Paul can barely snap Lego pieces together for our grandkids. Do you think I'm boring? Hell, I don't know. I don't live with you, and I don't know what you like in bed. Fuck you, Sheila. This is an issue in your house, baby cakes, not mine. I thank God for Viagra twice a month. And stop being such a prima donna, Savannah. It took more than half your life to find a man to marry, and Isaac is a good one. I know a lot of women who would love to have a husband like him. Then one can have him. I would cool my jets if I were in your shoes. You ain't exactly Beyonce, no offense. I know how old I am. It's hard out there, Savannah. If you go through with this without really thinking about how you can save your marriage, you probably end up regretting it. Did I ever tell you he voted for George Bush? I know you have got to be lying. He's a fucking registered Republican. Tell me this is a joke, right? No, I'm dead serious. Now, this is grounds for divorce. Okay. I cannot fuck a Republican, let alone be married to one. He needs help. I hear a click on the phone. Oh, Lord, Sheila, is Mama calling me on the other line? Don't hang up. I click her on. Hi, Mama. How you doing? Is everything okay? Everything is fine, but I had to call to tell you I had the weirdest dream last night about you and Isaac. I'm talking to Sheila right now. Can I call you back in a few minutes? I'm on my way to see that Michael Jackson movie, Finding Neverland. You heard of it? Yes, Mama, I have. I did not feel like telling her that it was a British movie with Johnny Depp and Kate Winslet and Michael wasn't in it. Anyway, I'm going with Sheila and those little badass grandkids, so tell her to make sure they go to the bathroom first and don't be late picking me up. I will, Mama. How is Isaac? He's fine. Why would you ask? Because in my dream, you all were getting a divorce over something stupid, but the dream didn't give me no hints. You two doing all right? We're good, Mama. Let me get back to Sheila so she can get over there on time. Love you and talk to you later. What does she want, Sheila asked. I'm supposed to be walking out the door in a few minutes. The kids think this movie's about Michael Jackson's ranch, and I'm not telling them any different. Anyway, I was saying I know how hard it is out here. It was hard 15 years ago, and I'm not letting this stop me from living my life. Oh, please. You're a half a damn century old, Savannah, okay? You had all the time in the world to live your damn life. Well, guess what? This is your life, and it's not a bad one. You just never satisfied. That's always been your problem. Enough is never enough for you. Go ahead and say it. What? Fuck you, Sheila. I wasn't going to say that. Go to hell, Sheila. And I love you, too. Now, can we change the subject real quick and then talk about your marriage or divorce tomorrow? I don't have anything else to say about it. You know I've been having problems with Go-Go, don't you? How would I know that? What kind of problems? First, let me say this. Mama's got a big mouth. And you know, if you want to keep your business to yourself, don't even think about telling her. As if I don't know this. And please don't tell her about this, okay? Tell her about what, Sheila? Get to the damn point, would you? You know Mama's sitting in front of her window staring at the curb. I'm on my cell phone. To make a long story short, wait, hold on a minute. I'm coming. Go get in the car. Wait. Africa, take the little ones to go make pee-pee first. Anyway, you know Go-Go just turned 18, even though he's in the 11th grade. But you remember when I had to hold him back in kindergarten because he lacked social skills, right? That's how it is sometimes. No, I don't, Sheila. The truth is, I don't know which one Go-Go is. I thought he was a she. Sheila and Paul have 5 or 6 kids. I can't even remember, and I dare not ask what Go-Go's real name is. Anyway, he's been hanging around with the wrong crowd here, and he got suspended for smoking weed. And I think he might be selling it, or his girlfriend might be selling it. But I was kind of hoping maybe if he could come out there and spend a couple or 3 weeks or part of the summer with you and Isaac. But since Isaac may or may not be in the picture, maybe just with you. Go-Go could be a big help around the house and keep you company. What you think? I love my sister to death, but she always puts me on the spot like this. If I said no, she'd be pissed or disappointed. I'm not in any position to be thinking about having my nephew, whom I don't even know, who also happens to be a pothead, coming for a summer stint. I don't know how to talk to kids, let alone teenagers. Let me deal with my marriage issue first, Sheila, and then let me think about if and when it might be a good time for Go-Go to come out. That's cool. Have you ever thought about counseling? We tried it. Counseling only works if both people want to save their marriage. I don't. Just don't do anything stupid when he gets home. Cut the man a little slack. Savannah, could you try to do that? I'll try, I say. And could you please try to keep your big mouth shut? I'm the Ziploc queen. Love you, sis. Before I can put the phone in the cradle, it rings in my hand. It's Isaac. You made it. I did, and I'm beat. Traffic was bumper to bumper for almost 2 hours. That's why I'm just getting around to calling. Is everything going all right? My laptop crashed. For real? I'm sorry to hear that. Would you mind if I used yours? I think I might have a virus. Didn't I tell you? No, you didn't. Why would you think that? Every time I try to visit any website, it keeps taking me to these porn sites. Well, why would you think it's a virus that's causing it? What else would make it do this? He asked. I wouldn't chance it. Then I won't bother. You do have a backup disk at work, don't you, Savannah? Thank God. But what about you, Isaac? Do you have one? No, I don't. You should, I say. Wait. She said you should, because you just never know when you might need it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Any questions? Oh, no questions? What time is it?
Hi, Terry.
Hi.
First, you look great.
Thank you.
That's fabulous. My question is, I was wondering...
You can't hear out of that mic.
Yes.
Where were you when you wrote the book? Did you write it in one sitting?
Say that again?
Where were you when you wrote the book?
Uh-huh.
Where did you write your book?
Where did I write this book?
Yeah. Where were you, like, mentally, and where were you physically? And did you write it all in one shot?
Write it in one shot?
One period of time, or did you break over like a few months or a few years? Did you write it in one extended period of time?
She wants to know where I was, what headspace I was in. Okay, first of all, I had been divorced. Surprise, surprise. And, I had, this was right after my last book, and I had just gotten divorced, and I had... Over the course of my last book tour, I ran into a lot of women who, as I signed their books, would say, "Girl, let me give you a hug." And then they would whisper things in my ears. Same thing happened to me, or "I feel your pain," or "Girl, been there too. You get over it, girl," whatever. And over the course of the next 6 months, when I continued to read from the book, I actually read in Oakland, California. And, I went to a lot of different cities, but what really struck me was how many women had been deceived on some level and betrayed. So that's what they were identifying with. It wasn't just about the whole gay thing. And then I ended up reading somewhere where there were 638 women in the room, in the church, I should say. And I read a poem, and I'm no poet. And the poem brought them to tears, and I couldn't understand it. But anyway, afterwards, I realized that there were a lot of women that I had gone to college with that were there, some of whom were my, financial aid counselors. But some of them had serious health issues. A few of them were in, like, wheelchairs. And some of them looked like they could be my mother. It was really frightening and very, very sad. So as I signed their books, it was like there was this aura of sadness in that church that I just couldn't shake. And as I signed their books, I could tell the ones, that they've never been married. Some of them, my friends, and have never had any kids and whatever. And it just floored me. It floored me. And I said, you know what? This is not how we need to be living. And I said, yes, my ex-husband was gay, but you know what? This party is not over. And, I'm not just saying it. And so I knew that the next story that I wanted to tell was going to have to deal with women who were close in age, in my age group, whose kids had suffered some kind of loss or were disappointed or were lonely or whose husband had traded them in for a new model, male or female. And, that life just didn't seem to add up to what they thought it was going to be. And I knew that this was not just because somebody dealt you this hand didn't mean you had to play it. Okay? And so I wanted to explore, because I was really angry for a couple of years there. I was bitter. And if I'd seen him, I'd have run his ass over. Okay? But that's why I love Snapped. I love that show. But no. But I have, the irony of this is that, of course, I've since forgiven him. You know, he's like my, sort of, he's not my BFF, but he's a friend. I still don't trust him. But he's, you know, I'm like so past it. But, so I was in a different frame of mind. I had already forgiven him, and I wasn't bitter, but I knew what anger and bitterness can do to you. Because I became a different person, and I did not like who she was. And what really helped was that I realized that I had the thought of letting a man bring me to this point. Mm-mm. Anybody for that matter, but just the fact that a man's betrayal could make you lose your center. Uh-uh. And I mean, there are a lot of things that can make it happen and not just a man. And so I just started thinking about all the things that can make you, I mean, women, you know, when your kids leave and they go off to college or whatever and you're home alone, some women don't know what to do with themselves without taking care of somebody. And among other things, you know, there are women out here that I know that are lonely and it just bothered me. And so I thought that I would turn my bitterness and my anger and my, what I've watched and what I saw around me and use that to explore why we don't treat ourselves better and why we don't give ourselves permission to live the way we want to live and to do the things that will bring us more joy, because the pain and the bullshit comes easy, you know, and we don't have a lot of control over that. But there are a lot of things that we can, and that took me a year and a half to discover, and this is the result.
How you doing, Ms. McMillan? It's a pleasure to see you. The thing I remember last time you was here is how it affected your son, because I thought it was a shame that you said he had to delay his enrollment in Stanford. Can you tell me how your son's doing?
No. My son graduated from Stanford with honors. But go ahead.
I was saying how he was worried about you, you know, because what y'all were going
through. Well, yeah, I was his mama. But the thing is that, I mean, there were a lot of ugly things that were going on at that time in this whole procedure. But he ended up, not going. He was going to go to school in London to a sound engineering. But now he plays the guitar and he's pretty good at it. And he moved to Memphis, Tennessee, and works for Gibson Guitar Company. And he's doing well, with the exception of no furniture in his little raggedy apartment. But he won't ask me for a dime. And so But I did slip him a few gift cards. Target, Sears, you know. And he took those and he kind of looked at me. But no, Solomon is fine. And he's fine. And he's 26. And tall, black, and handsome. And has the utmost respect for women.
Hi, I've enjoyed all your books and the movies, and even though the book just came out yesterday, you know we'll be waiting for a movie.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I don't care who plays as long as it's a movie. Have you, in your forethinking, considered this book to also be a movie?
Well, you know what, the thing is this. I'll just say this. The movie rights sold to this book, I don't know, 6 months ago? See, the thing is that it takes about 9 months from the time you finish a book for production before it actually becomes one. And so Hollywood, especially because of Waiting to Exhale, you know, they bought it up quickly. And, you know, I didn't expect it to happen. I really didn't. Because I didn't know if middle-aged black women would be that interesting to them. Not that I cared. Okay? Because they were interesting. They mattered to me. And so they bought it. And so I wrote the screenplay and turned it in yesterday. But Angela, all three of the women, with the exception of Whitney, who we hope is healthy enough and interested to be able to still play Savannah. But right now it's early enough in the game, so it doesn't really matter yet. But the other three women, they've read the book, love it, and want it. So we'll see.
To show up,
say that again.
I'm available.
Say it again.
If Whitney doesn't want to show up, I'm available.
Okay. Wait, where?
Hi, my question is regarding public speaking. Do you
public what?
Speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Do you present your, like, where you are now? Do you give that information to the young girls who are in domestic violence relationships? How they can get back to their, well, not one, not be abused. Two,
well,
understand that a lot of the young brothers that they're dealing with may have some of the same issue that your husband had. How do you get them to see?
First of all, let me just say this.
Whoa.
You know, I have a website. Anybody been on my website? Yeah. Go check it out. It's going to be even, you know, I have a lot of stuff on that website. We're building it. And most of it is not about Terry McMillan, okay? I have a whole page, it's called Even More, where we deal with parenting skills, education, brothers and sisters in prison, all kinds of things, and health issues and all that. This is one of the topics, you know, that we are trying to, we're building it, okay? All we can do is try to provide information, and whether or not people choose to use it is up to them. You know, you can't shove anything down anybody's throat. But, you know, the last I heard, I have to say this, and I know sometimes it's impossible, but I still think that parents play a major role in what happens to their children. And I know in some cases parents have been abused and they haven't been taught things. So it's a never-ending cycle. It goes from one generation to the next, okay? But that at some point, you know, we wise up. And in some cases even the kids wise up. You know, they say, hey, this is not right what's going on here. You know, don't put your hands on me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And a lot of times what people need is a place to turn. And sometimes they don't know where to go. And so, I mean, I'm one person, but I know how to find information. And I know that if people migrate towards where that information is, then they will use it, especially if they're not intimidated by it. And so we're trying to set this site up so that it offers information to people that may be afraid. And I'm talking also about people that are in the closet. Because, you know, I mean, the one thing I've even explained to my husband is grateful is I said, you know, and when we went on Oprah, the idea was that the only reason I went on that show, because I didn't need the publicity, I didn't need to go on Oprah, you know, was to make sure that other people knew how hurtful it is to live a double life and to lie to someone that that is supposed to trust you. But not only that, but how difficult it is to live a double life and how painful it should be to him and other people who do it to lie to themselves about what they're doing. Everybody loses. You know, everybody loses.
And so these are the kind of things that I hope can come out. That's what I went on the show to do. And I did say it, since he didn't open his mouth. I said it, and they cut it out of the show. Yes, they did. Yes, they did. They edited it right out of that show, and I was pissed off. And I told Oprah I was pissed off. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And her little producer. But there are a lot of things out here. I mean, my thing has always been that, you know, there are a lot of things that we can do for each other. And, you know, first you have to save yourself before you can save anybody else. But it's information, you know, it's information. And people realizing that they don't have to be afraid to admit when they have been harmed, and when they are victims. Because otherwise your life is not yours. And nobody should own it but you. Amen. Nobody should own it but you. And I think, you know, there's some things that are very difficult to overcome, obviously. But I still think your happiness is the best revenge you could ever get. Yes. And karma is a bitch. It really is. It will get them. And I don't want to say too much, but my ex, he ain't doing so hot. Mm-mm. It's like you can't just be doing things to folks. You know? I bought him a chicken dinner. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I think we only have time for a few more questions before they kick us out. In the back. You with your hand, you had your hand up? Just shout it out, honey. Well, I can't hear you.
Good evening, everyone. It's beautiful to see all the support out here for Terry. I've looked forward to this for many years, waiting for this book and follow up. But I wanted to ask you if you're able to recite that poem that you mentioned that you read, and if not, where can we find it?
Oh, honey, I'm telling you, no, it's a long poem. It was a prose poem. It was really prose. I just pushed it all to the left. I'm not putting that on my website. No, it was not a good poem. All I can say is this, is I was comparing my ex-husband to a cigarette. I called him. The poem was called Bad Habit. And I used to smoke. And I used to think, and I said, you know, just like cigarettes, they tricked me into thinking that they were my friend. But really, they were killing me. Okay? And so I just wrote a poem making an analogy. You know? That was it. It was not a good poem. Some good lines in it, but not a good poem.
Ms. McMillan, how do you feel about the state of black fiction as it is today, with all the different books, you know, different genres that have come up, and it seems like nobody else can really get anything
decent
published of the state of fiction in the African-American genre?
You already know the answer to that. Huh? My opinion is that I think it's unfortunate that a lot of the things that we strove for are, you know, in terms of pride and trying to befriend and care and love each other seems to take a back seat or get shoved into the basement. And instead, ugliness prevails. Genocide prevails. Killing each other and doing each other in is sport. And sex is gratuitous and takes top shelf. And you know, putting black women's half-naked bodies on the covers of books to sell them is insulting to me. But, you know, I think that if a lot of these stories were written better and edited better, if at all, and if there was something redeeming, you know, because everybody knows what life in the hood is like, and even rappers have changed their tune. You know, everybody used to be bitch, motherfucker, gub, you know, and now a lot of them aren't playing it that way. They are starting to realize that it's getting us nowhere, and that, you know, and plus, after a while, you just cancel yourself out. And I think on some levels, that's what's happening with some of this stuff. But again, if you were to write about gang banging or people doing each other in and somebody trying to get out of it and the impact that it may have on your family, and your children instead of glorifying it, then I could see reading it. But that's not what I've seen. And I find it insulting. And I mean, I use profanity in my book, but I try to write the way people talk. And, you know, fiction should give you hope. And that stuff doesn't give me hope. It doesn't. And I often just imagine old men taking those books into the stalls, you know, and just saying, damn, I'm so glad these people keep writing this. And where do they keep finding these fine women, you know? It's sad. Okay, one last question. I think we are getting kicked out of here.
Hi, Ms. McMillan.
Hello.
I'm just glad you're here. And I just had a question about your characters. I wondered if you based your characters on any live people or if they were aspects of yourself, because I know sometimes we used to say, oh, well, you're Robin or you're Savannah. So I just wanted to know if you based the characters on any people you knew or were they completely fictitious, and how do you get your titles?
No, I have too many people that I know and care about that I don't want them mad at me. Coming up with characters is not a problem, but I have a whole technique. I mean, I created a long time ago. I went to McDonald's once and got an application for a job, and then I just expounded it. I mean, I just added all kinds of stuff, you know, everything from do they have a scar, what sign are they, you know, things they hate, things they love, are they allergic to anything, their favorite meal, what size shoe they wear, what's their biggest secret, has anybody ever hurt them, have they been in love, do they pay their bills on time, they write bad checks, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What's their biggest secret? What are they ashamed of? What is it that's their biggest challenge in their life right now? What is it they wish they could change, that they could fix, if they could? Have they ever been in love? Have they ever had their heart broken? You know, who do you hate? You know, if you could get away with something, what would it be? I know all of this, and then some. All of it, what their favorite class was in high school, even though I may not ever mention high school. But I know these people, and I know what makes them tick. And also, I have a big book called The Birthday Book, and I look in there for certain traits based on the story that I think I want to tell. And then I know that this one's going to be a little dingy. You know, this one's going to be a little stubborn. You know, and then you just go from there. And you put them in situations where I just try to write about characters that whatever it is their thing is, I will put it in front of them so they can't have it. Because that's the way life is. You know, the thing that you crave the most is the thing you can't get. A good husband. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Thank you all very, very much. Thank you. Thank you.
Please join us upstairs in the lobby for the book signing.
Thank you for listening to a podcast from the Free Library's Author Event Series. If you live in Philadelphia or are planning a visit and would like to attend an author event, information is available at freelibrary.org.